I'm Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers.
We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest.
Mm-hmm.
You really went up on that one.
Yeah.
That was enthusiastic.
Yeah. So when we get to season two, do I get to say we share knowledge regarding SeaQuest? When do I get to say that one? Do we get to ever trade?
Anytime you like
it. It might go better because anytime. Then you can say whatever your opening bit is and you're not like waiting for me.
We don't need an opening bit.
I feel like you always have one though. You stare at me waiting for me to say something.
Yeah, for like a conversation to begin and flow. Anyway, I do have an opening bit.
I knew it! I knew you fucking did! I don't have opening bits.
Well, offhandedly, in the middle of our conversation last week, I brought up how I feel that the Canadian television film G-Savior feels like, spiritually, an episode of SeaQuest.
Yeah, in its soul.
In its soul. It is...
Jesus put it there.
I think you'll find that the Illuminati is responsible for G-Savior, but that's a story for a different time.
You know, everyone's got their thing. It's fine.
So some of our listeners picked up on that, and those who are familiar with both agreed. They backed me up, and I wanted to talk about some things they have in common more directly.
Okay.
To feed those specific people, I guess. Including the effects work of John F. K. Parentow and John F. Gross.
Mm, we got a lot of Fs.
There's a lot of Fs in the chat.
A lot of John Fs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Watch out in November, you guys. Don't go to Dallas. So these guys are both working in like the in-house Amblin Entertainment effects house during SeaQuest.
Mm-hmm.
Then go into business together and found the like private effects house that does G-Savior.
Mm.
They start with, you know, Darwin and a bunch of submarines,
yeah.
And then they make a Gundam.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also, Emmy-winning composer John Debney.
Okay.
Did both projects.
What did he win an Emmy for?
SeaQuest.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I thought it was something else because you didn't say, like, the context of the Emmy.
Mm-hmm. He wrote the SeaQuest theme,
gotcha.
And did a lot of season one's incidental score.
Oh, okay. This is a lot of Johns.
And the fourth one is not named John.
Oh, good.
The fourth one is producer Philip David Segal, perhaps Segal. Well, how would you?
You could say it either way, I guess. You feeling fancy, Segal?
His credit on SeaQuest is like executive in charge of production, which is a distinct thing from executive producer.
Apparently.
But on SeaQuest, he was the guy at Amblin. He was running Amblin Television at the time. The creation of SeaQuest DSV is as much coming from him as it is from Rockney O'Bannon, for instance. That means he's also in charge of things like Earth 2 coming soon to NBC. But then he gets into actual producer's credit, getting in not from the production office, but like on the project, getting his hands dirty. And his second producer credit is G-Savior. His first is the 1996 Doctor Who TV movie.
Okay.
On the Fox network. Yes. That is a project that he was trying to get made for years before. He was a major driving force to bring Paul McGann and his frilly little neck ruff to the world.
Yeah. Also see some Andromeda and Mutant X.
Yeah.
Okay.
He worked on Andromeda as a producer and also a director. His few directorial credits on TV. But he's become very fantastically successful in the last couple decades in reality television for dads.
Oh.
Philip David Segal is the guy behind Ice Road Truckers and The Deadliest Catch and 10 other kinds of The Deadliest Catch. So you could say that he's gone back to the ocean.
He's gone back to the ocean. He's gone from whence he has came.
Early 90s, Ocean. Late 90s, non-American projects being made for American television, even if one of them was actually Canadian. But then the 21st century, right back to that ocean.
Right back to that ocean.
Yes.
You can't wander.
Mostly crab-based affairs, but yes.
Crabs? Is Deadliest Catch a lot of crab-based?
They're crab fishermen. They fish for the crabs. That's what the Deadliest Catch is.
Oh.
Yeah.
I just thought it was deep sea fish. Like, hey, we gotta go, you know, the gales of November on Superior or something. Like, we're getting the whitefish. But, it's risky out here.
They're getting the arthropods, is what they're getting.
I didn't know it was crabs. I didn't. My mind is blown. So it's like, is there, one season, spinoff that's, lobsters?
It could be.
We're gonna get the lobsters today.
I will say lobster fishing seems pretty chill.
Or, we are the mahi-mahi boat.
Anyhow, today we're here to talk about the 20th episode of Sequest DSV in its first season. It is titled Abalon. It is written by Patrick Hasberg, back from writing Whale Song and being part of the committee that wrote The Stinger.
So many people.
And directed by Les Sheldon, the comedy guy, back from The Regulator and more recently Nothing But The Truth.
This makes sense. This makes sense. Yeah. I can see it, buddy. I get it. Though, Patrick, dude, I do have some questions for you about this writing.
Patrick, dude.
There are times in this episode that the writing's got me going huh?
I will say the dialogue is generally very good and very fun, especially on the Sequest.
Most of the time.
Yes.
At the beginning, some of it's so out of character.
There are some bits of plotting toward, around the big action climax that I find ropey.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of good,
There's
a lot of good exchanges.
There's a lot of really good exchanges.
Yeah.
There are also just some moments that are kind of did we, cut some dialogue here? And this was just what was left?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyhow, this episode begins without a trailer for itself.
No trailer. Also, we're at a trench. We don't know what one, but we're at one.
There is no little ident on the screen telling us what this trench is. We know it's 34,000 feet deep.
Yes.
That's about as deep as they get.
It's pretty far down there. But apparently it's not named. Couldn't they have just said the no-name trench?
That's a very racist trench.
And then they could
trench.
Have said location classified.
Oh, there you go.
This is all classified.
Location classified would be a great, great little interstitial.
Or
on
like
the bottom,
yes. Redacted trench.
Yeah.
They could have done so much. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They could have done so much.
They did none of those things. You know what they did do? They built a big yellow robot suit for Ford.
Yes. And they sent him to the bottom of the trench.
For 22 hours, I hope it came with snacks.
I'm sure they got stuff in there. I'm sure there's a way for this man to pee.
Oh, you mean the ballast.
Stay hydrated. And I do okay, I'm jumping ahead here.
Sure.
Because, he has to come back up. And so when he comes back up, it doesn't take 22 hours for him to come up. So why did it take 22 hours for him to get the fuck down there?
It doesn't take 22 hours for him to get down. It's 22 hours total dive time.
Yes, but why?
Because he has a lot of, tiptoeing through the tulips to do at the bottom of this trench.
It's never explained, why it's 22 hours. They focus so much on him being at this depth, but it's not no one explains why the length is mattering.
Right. And also, he's being monitored by West Phalen and the captain, and they are very concerned about his mental state due to, the effects of pressures. They don't talk about nitrogen narcosis, but we know all about nitrogen narcosis
by
now.
We do. There might be ghosts. You never know.
they're worried about, the isolation and just like perhaps the claustrophobia of being in this robot-like dive suit. But he has been awake for 22 hours minimum. That's if he rolled out of bed into the dive suit.
And like, we're not talking about that at all.
Like, there's a lot of factors.
I'm very confused by some of this. But yeah, so he's down there. He's wandering around, floating around. They're chatting with him, and he's starting to go off the rocker a little bit.
Yeah. Our straight-laced, by-the-book Ford that we know and love, he's getting chatty. He's calling the captain pal. That's not like my Ford.
Yeah, it's very weird down there and doesn't like it. And Westphalen's like, he's probably starting to feel drunk now because of things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Again, it's just this whole, like, they're concerned about the depth, but not the fact this man has been awake forever. Like, yeah, maybe that's why he's really tired. Like, it's the combination.
I did not see, like, a sandwich port on this suit. The man is hungry.
Yeah, he's like, it's getting creepy down here, pal. Like, snapping at the captain.
And getting testy.
And is, yeah, definitely acting out of his mind a little bit. But then
suddenly, out of nowhere,
he sees a mermaid.
He sees a lady.
And the second time you see her, you see she has legs and not a tail. Mm-hmm. And there's this woman swimming down there in front of him at 34,000 feet.
Where no one could possibly be without this experimental robot dive suit.
Yes.
And his response to this is, for one, awe. And then saying, this sucks, I'm gone. And immediately, like, emergency ascending to the point that Bridger has to yell at him to slow down or else his head will explode from the pressure differential.
And so they have to, like, take over his ascent to the top. When we first see him down there, there is a whisker, like, right at fucking front of him, watching him.
They got a monitor.
But then that whisker disappears when the mermaid comes around.
Well, it's a loner.
I see what you did there. I see that. Good job. That can be it. And so, like, no one sees this, and apparently there is no, like, camera on his suit, which I feel like is an oversight.
Mm-hmm.
If you have this state-of-the-art, fancy-ass new suit you're testing, wouldn't you want cameras on it? Just attach a little GoPro.
I can explain this with one question. Where is Ortiz in this episode?
We see him once.
And it's far, far off. This is Ortiz's day off.
Yeah.
And therefore, no one is sensing nothing.
So why was the whisker down there? Who was driving the whisker down there? Loner just out on his own? Also on a day trip?
They have very advanced algorithms. They just...
Did Ortiz just go on break?
Yeah.
Which is why the whisker got called back in and isn't out there?
Okay.
Yeah, it was time for his lunch break.
Ortiz also had to go pee, much like Ford. And so, like, the whisker just sort of wandered off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not looking at this. And so then we get the opening credits as Ford is maybe going to explode his brain, which is, like, the fastest, like, sequence of an opener before credits,
It's pretty dense. It's pretty dense.
It's very fast.
Yes.
Like, it doesn't take much time, actually.
And when we're back to the action, we're back to Ford on another dive. And this suit looks like a dork when it runs.
Yeah, he's just hopping through the bottom of the ocean floor. And he's like, oh, man, we should build more of these and have a football team.
He's giddy. He's excited. He's doing like a
somersault.
Yeah, he's doing like a somersault cartwheel, doing flips. And back on Sequest, Westphalen and Bridger are talking like, yeah, he always gets a bit loopy as he approaches the 20-hour mark.
Yeah, me too!
What? Yes!
As someone who's done Gextra Life a few times, let me tell you.
It
happens long before you hit 20. Long before.
And we could get muffaletta delivered from the place down the road.
So Ford starts singing also, nice little tune, And Bridger's like, oh my god, we are bringing him up. Okay, this is enough.
How dare my most boring friend have a personality? I will not stand for this.
And so as Bridger's bringing him up, the mermaid girl swims right in front of Ford's, like, face.
And we see she is not nude.
She's not nude, she's, no.
That was not clear to me in the first appearance.
She's wearing a leotard, a full body, to ankles and wrists leotard. Ford is just staring at her, and as she's gone and he's still going up, he's like, help me, Captain!
And what follows is a really extended sequence of like CG shots of the suit,
yes,
ascending and climbing aboard into the port. And you can sort of see all the like, launches and sea crabs parked inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool shot of like looking in to where we don't normally see. So then we got to cut to Lucas, though, who is in his room.
Talking to Biff.
His friend Biff Pickering.
Biff sucks.
I hate Biff so much. and Lucas is getting bullied into lying to the captain that to say he is going to be hanging out with Biff. When in reality, like, oh, we're, like, tell the captain we're, like, studying for, like, some grad school courses or, like, we're going to a conference, but really it's a party, and I got these keys from, like, a dude who I, like, hacked shit with the IRS for him.
Yes.
So, like, come to the party. And Lucas is like, no, 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 I can't, I don't lie to the captain. And he's like, why not?
I love this plot line because it does a very typical teenage story that it has to fit on Sequest and does very little effort to make that work.
Yeah.
Because I love that Biff is like, oh yeah, I'm telling my dad that I'm going to be with you on Sequest for the weekend. And your dad's going to buy that? Why? Wow. How?
His dad's apparently very stupid.
Aren't they in, like, Sumatra or something? Just a weekend trip to the flagship of the UEO?
Yeah. So, like, you tell Bridger you're with me. And he's like, I can't lie to him. He's like, why not? I always tell him the truth because it's the easiest thing to remember.
Yeah, that's his little excuse to still come off as cool when the reason is because I really respect my fake dad. I love him very much.
I don't know. I also kind of love the idea, though, that Lucas is like, I really fucking suck at lying. So, like, I just don't because, like, this never goes well. It's just easier.
So yeah, with the cover story worked out, that this is actually just a conference on the topic of post-adolescent behavior.
Mm-hmm. But, because Lucas is still not, he's like, I don't know. And he's like, well, Juliana's going to be there.
You remember Juliana from Hacker Camp?
And you remember the girl from Hacker Camp? Menace? And like, this other girl told me, like, Juliana wants to fuck your brains. Excuse me, go all the way.
That's the phrase. The phrase that is used is go all the way. And let me tell you, this is the most explicit thing said in the entire episode. There are scenes where that works for me really well, and I'll mention it when we get there. Uh-huh. And there are scenes, one in particular, that drives me nuts that the most explicit thing they can say is go all the way. But yes, luckily for Lucas, Bridger has other concerns.
Yes. So Bridger is with Ford, hearing about the mermaid, and is like, why didn't you tell us about this girl before, Ford? And he was like, well, I felt crazy, but she smiled at me, Captain. She was real. She was down there.
I love Bridger's response, quote, it couldn't be a mermaid, Jonathan. They don't make them.
and what I love this, like, also this moment. So, like, Ford is sitting there on, like, you know, medical bed. His wetsuit half off is, like, Wes Phelan's checking him out. And when he, like, wants to, you know, officially make a statement of, like, no, this is what I saw, Captain, and I want it to go on the record, he, like, pulls his wetsuit back up so his chest isn't out anymore so he can be more official.
But he does it in such a hurry, it's only over one shoulder. The other shoulder is just sort of flopping there.
Yeah. But I like this, like gotta put my hat on.
This episode has some deleted scenes, and I think it would be useful, or at least help the flow, if we talk about them as they come up.
Okay.
Which means we've already passed the first one.
Yeah.
Because the first dive had its own debrief before this one, where Ford doesn't talk about the mermaid. He talks about seeing a plesiosaur. He thinks that story will be more plausible.
It's like, I saw something.
Or perhaps that's how he's like...
rationalizing it in his brain.
Yeah, that's the word. Yes. And he gets really testy at them questioning his judgment, and he snaps, quote, "I wasn't getting wiggy."
Yeah, you were.
But at least that would have helped, you know, the pre-title sequence be closer to the average length
of
the other pre-title sequences.
You guys cut that. Okay. We now see where that went. So after, though, in the scene where Ford, like, puts his wetsuit back on and is, like, put it in the log and, like, walks off, Westphalen turns to Bridger and is like, you don't think it's possible? And Bridger just looks at her and is like, Kristen, a mermaid.
Hey, man, everybody's mean girls today.
He's so sassy.
She even tries to argue, like, hey, we live in a time of miracles. Look at Darwin. And in order to be right in this argument, he dismisses the vocoder, this amazing thing that in part is causing world peace at UEO conferences.
True.
As just some, like, smoke and mirrors claptrap. It doesn't matter. It's not a real breakthrough.
What does he say? Like, until Darwin...
Like, if he hops out of the water and plays piano, that's a breakthrough.
He would need fingers.
There's your breakthrough right there, yeah.
What if he could learn to play with his snoot?
You know, simple melodies, but he could do it, yeah.
You know what? I trust Lucas to take his little fog machine thing that interprets his, like, you know, butt wiggles.
Yes.
But turn it into where it's, like, a thing that plays the piano for Darwin.
Yes.
And interprets his musical notations with his butt.
It's also his fins. You know, the fins are... Dolphins don't really have butts.
His tail.
Sure.
That's his butt.
It's his butt. Okay.
We had an argument about some animal not that long ago and what constitutes as its butt.
And we're still having it, it seems.
I don't remember what that one was about, though. Maybe it was just a fish. I was arguing about what part of a fish was its butt. Was it like...
Fish don't have butts.
The end or the bottom. And yeah, you were all like, fish don't have
fish
butts.
Don't have
but
butts.
I was like, it's essentially its butt.
Butts are gluteuses. A gluteal muscle with a fatty deposit on top is a butt. Fish don't have that.
But the end.
Fish have ends. Fish have rears. Fish have anteriors. Fish have posteriors. Fish do not have butts.
But rear is also a word for butt. So, essentially, they have a butt because it's their rear. You can't deny this. You can't. That's why you're trying to move on and you're not saying anything right now.
So Bridger has a prescription for what he thinks ails Ford. You know, the sea madness.
And so he goes up to Ford, who's watching Whisker footage with Ortiz nowhere around. And it's like, hey, here's what you need to do. You're getting taken off this, this project.
Happens to everybody. Everybody gets taken off a project.
And Ford's like, no, I've never been taken off anything in my entire life.
I'm still on my children's Tylenol. I've never been taken off.
Just like the little swigs of children's Tylenol servings. Bridger's like, you're gonna take some shore leave. You're gonna go have some beers.
But also have this emergency distress beacon. That's normal, right? That's normal for shore leave. So yes, with this sort of like life alert pager in hand.
I did refer to it as life alert in all of my notes.
Yes.
It is also gigantic as fuck.
I love this idea that Ford is so bad at relaxing, there's a chance it might kill him. Well, and he needs to hit the escape button.
He has been ordered to have beers, yes, get girls, and sleep. These are things Ford does not do.
We know he doesn't sleep. He was diving for 22 hours.
And Ford, like, really seems put out. Like, it is the absolute... He's like, what am I gonna do up there? Like, dude, you see the sun every so often. You're from the land.
I love that his entire shore leave, he literally is never more than a stone's throw from the water. He does not get past the beach.
Well, why would you when your whole hope is that you're going to be called back for an emergency any moment? Like, he goes and, like... professional relaxation attire.
Yes.
Like, he's wearing, like, a suit jacket.
He's wearing a blazer over a sweater with jeans.
In, like, the tropics.
On the beach. Oh. I like this episode. I like this episode because it's every joke I've ever made about Ford. Patrick Hasburg has my back. He's there with me.
We come back to Lucas, who is, like, hovering outside of Bridger's quarters, waiting for him, and talking to himself.
He's
practicing.
Practicing his lie.
You know, his social phenomenon of post-adolescence. Yeah. Social phenomenon of post-adolescence. Like, let's make it natural. And, like, turns around and bumps into Bridger immediately.
Can I go to the Sanger Institute for the weekend? And Bridger's like, yeah, all right.
Though, really, when he hears that it's Biff... that invited him to go to this conference, he should have been like, yeah, no, it's Biff. We hate the Biffer.
Yeah, he knows Biff. He asks, how's the Biffer? And the response is, still biffering.
Yes.
This asshole is a known quantity aboard the Sequest DSV.
He's just so slimy.
Wolfman would never put him in this position. Where's Wolfman?
But yeah, so Bridger's like, sure, go, leave me a number. And Lucas is like, hey, can I take the stinger? Can I have the car, Dad?
Exactly. Another way that this is just like drag and drop, find and replace. They're treating the fastest experimental mini sub in the ocean like the minivan.
Yes. I mean, I feel like it makes more sense, though, to let Lucas drive that. You know, the mini sub that didn't get picked up,
mm-hmm,
then like an entire launch.
Right. Or send the Sequest over to this teen party.
Yeah. Or be like, hey, Krieg, go drop Lucas off. Which, speaking of my good buddy Krieg.
I would love it, actually, if they sent Hitchcock instead.
Oh my God.
And then, like, the people at the party are like, dude, Lucas, your mom is so hot. Why you got such a hot mom, Lucas?
Or, like, Hitchcock just hovers and, like, will not leave when she sees it's a party. And she's like, no. No, Lucas.
Lucas, your weird hot mom keeps wanting to do karaoke. It's not a karaoke party.
She wants to sing jazz?
We don't like it. It's weird.
She stole that girl's hat. What's up? It's like, yeah, she had a weird thing. It's a thing.
It was real popular in 2009. You remember? We were like 4 years old or whatever.
So we go check in on Krieg, mm-hmm, who is watching essentially porn.
He's watching Bikini Babes.
Yes.
His holotapes have been revealed. And the way this works is... So you know the Viewmaster toy?
Yeah.
What if that was unnecessarily fancy? Still images? Okay, moving images.
Yeah, but clips.
But yeah, very short clips of Bikini Babes on walking the beach.
Yeah, yeah. It makes me think of those those damn sound clips, mm-hmm, that were, mm-hmm, a thing that only played like 30 seconds of a song.
Hit clips.
Yeah, it makes me think of that, but for videos.
But for butts.
For butts. We're going to show you a butt for like 2 seconds.
Now,
and
these
then
ladies,
move on to a different butt.
Unlike fish, they got butts. I saw them. That's a butt.
Yeah. So Lucas comes in, and Krieg is like, oh my god, don't you knock! And he's like, it's fine, Krieg. I've seen it. And he's like, what do you mean, what have you seen? Beach Babes of Barcelona. You hide it in your shoe. Like, This mortifies Krieg somehow.
Why are you going through his cowboy boots in the closet? Hey, Krieg, why you got cowboy boots in the closet?
Because Lucas knows that Krieg has the good stuff, such as the beach babes, possibly drugs, what? Other things.
You think the real reason he couldn't make it work with Hitchcock is she wanted to go to the like jazz piano bar and he wanted to go down to the honky tonk and square dance?
Maybe.
And they just couldn't cross that divide?
They couldn't. They couldn't match there.
Oh, it's all coming together.
But Lucas is like, hey, can I borrow some cologne?
And Krieg is very curious about exactly what sort of academic conference requires a young man to be colonized.
Well, he doesn't even mention the conference yet. He specifically is like, what are you doing? Running some tests on Darwin's... What is
like, his olfactory senses? Yes. Yeah.
I love that line.
Yeah.
Because it's like... Dude, what do you fucking need cologne for? What are you up to? I know what you get up to on a Saturday night. Always involves Darwin.
It's playing cubes.
And he's, I have a conference. I'm going to a conference. And he's like, oh yeah. Is that girlfriend of yours going to be there?
And he keeps stammering out about the conference until at one point he says, it's not like it's, what do you think it is? An orgy or something? Like... Do you think it's an orgy or something, Lucas?
Lucas is worried it's going to be an orgy or something. He, as soon as those words leave his mouth, he is absolutely overcome.
Like, oh shit, what if it is?
What if it is? I going to do? I've never been to an orgy. What do you do? Do you need cologne for an orgy? Krieg, help me.
I've been trying to build up the will to disappoint one partner, not like seven. God.
And so Krieg pulls it out of him, though, is like, is it really a conference? I was like, no, it's a party.
It's a party.
This is what's going on. And yeah, like, you know, Juliana's going to be there. And Krieg's like, this sounds like a really bad idea.
But he does bestow upon him the magic cologne.
Yes.
He talks about it like it's Axe body spray from the commercial long before that commercial existed.
Then is like, is there anything else you want to borrow?
They cannot say the word condom.
They cannot say condom.
They cannot say the, like...
We cannot say condom, we cannot say sex.
There is heavy implication. But Lucas is like, yeah. He totally, like, picks up the psychic vibe that we can't say on network television Sunday evenings on NBC.
If you have
1994.
One, sure.
And he's of course like, he would have when he's a supply officer in a fucking Navy ship.
But it looks like he takes his own out of his wallet. He doesn't, like, go to his supplies. He's like, here's my personal condom, Lucas.
You know who should have 200 condoms on hand?
Krieg.
Krieg and Westphalen.
Well, he's not going to Westphalen for this. And then Krieg's like, so do you know how to use this? And Lucas is like, I'm not that dumb. But then they have this whole conversation about sex. And like, Lucas, are you going to have sex? And like, don't be dumb about it. And like, make sure you make smart choices. You're only 17. So like, you don't need to have sex right now. But they do it all through like, are you going to do something dumb? Well, I'm not planning to. But if I do something dumb, I want to make sure I'm prepared to do something dumb.
That's the euphemism, and the only euphemism is do something dumb in this entire conversation.
And Krieg's like, Lucas, you don't, it's not a race to grow up. Like, you could take it slow, and he's like, you say that, because you've already been dumb. Sex. We
just
can say
it.
Sex.
If, like...
Sex, condom, not hard words.
Benjamin Krieg, I understand that he wants to play this a little soft. He doesn't want to spook the boy.
He doesn't want to spook the boy.
But Benjamin Krieg should be using the words sucking and or fucking. Like,
yes.
To be honest to the man.
Yes. As much as I hate for the fact that they will not say the words, I do love this scene. I I love Krieg in this scene with Lucas and how he very much is like, I know you're fucking up to shit. Mm-hmm, like, tell me what you're doing. Come clean. Also, yes, I do not want to scare you because you are a little wee baby.
But, like,
but I am the supportive older brother who's going to guide you.
Right. Yeah. He's the guy who's been around the block. He's the guy who recognizes you gotta like make healthy mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta live your own life, blah blah blah. It's a very like him and Bridger's involvement in the Lucas plot is a very, like, it takes a village sort of thing.
Yeah.
They're bringing different but necessary things to bear in the adolescence of Lucas Walinchek. It's good. But he should say, he should at least have different euphemisms more than one.
Yes. Krieg should have, like, 12 that they're using every time we refer to it. If we cannot say sex or condom,
we can say knockin' boots.
Every single time he references it needs to be a different saying.
He can say horizontal hula. He's the type who would. He's Krieg.
He absolutely would. You're gonna go get your own beach, babe. Huh, Lucas? Well, just keep an eye out for her Barcelona.
If you're lucky, she'll take you to Ibiza.
So Lucas,
you know how to use one of these, boy? Go ask Darwin. He's
No suits.
No, Darwin. No, no. Promote responsible behavior, Darwin. No. Darwin can't feel anything. That's a fucking lie, Darwin.
Takes me out of the moment. Stop it, Darwin.
Stop it. Just the tip. Fuck no, Darwin. No.
I'll pull out in time.
No, Darwin. Go to your room.
No fish for you.
I'm going to tell your seaweed mom. Your seaweed mom. Next time she brings your chicken soup kelp, I'm telling your mom.
We're going to tell Westphalen, and then that lady will have a long talk with you about safe sex. So Lucas leaves.
Yeah.
He's in the stinger. He's having the best fucking joyride.
He's in the full, like, racing jumpsuit and like, motorcycle helmet from the stinger episode.
And it's like, woo!
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'm going to an orgy!
Perhaps.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe I should have gotten more than one of these.
I think there's like a 1 in 6 chance. We're going to roll the dice here.
So we go to this party.
Oh boy. What a party. Full of dorks.
My favorite things from this party are the glass cases with bubbles.
Uh-huh. You gotta have your bubbles.
And the sugar water drinks.
Yeah.
The little tubs. Right? Like the 90s school lunchbox, like sugar water with the little peel off. I don't know what we call them. Those are their beverages.
Oh, I thought one of your favorite things was going to be the guy who had a sign on his back that said, very cool, in all caps. Just a paper sign. Someone wrote very cool and pinned to this guy.
This party's so fucking awful.
Well, it's just made of all your, like, precocious super genius teens.
Yeah. Biff, you need to learn more people. You gotta open up everyone's horizons.
Can people who don't have a master's come to this party?
No.
For 16-year-olds?
So we catch up with Lucas and Biff.
Lucas is wearing his dad's jacket.
The largest fucking suit jacket I've ever seen.
You could put football pads on under this thing.
Also, Biff looks like he's both 42 and 17 at the same time.
Well, the lady's
probably
like
a bookie.
The lady's like a mature man with an independent income.
Yeah.
You see. Yeah, yeah.
And Biff's like, hey, Lucas, look, there she is. And we pan over to Juliana.
Looking like Emily Dickinson.
it's very 90s. and Lucas is going to go up to her. But then the tallest man in the world.
head and shoulders over everyone in the party. A 7-foot giant is talking to her, and she's smiling. And when she leaves, he leans down so she can give him a nice little smooch on the cheek.
Yeah, and Lucas is like, Biff, who's that? And he's like, I don't know, but he's taller than you. He's taller than everyone, Biff! This is the tallest man I've ever seen.
She came to the party with Lurch. What do you mean he's taller than you? Yeah, no shit.
Fucking giant. Lucas, did you steal his coat? Coat would fit him.
How does this man get here if everyone is traveling by submarine? He wouldn't fit.
Everyone else actually, like, did get there by car.
Imagine the valet who gets handed the keys to the Stinger. What am I supposed to do with this, man?
I'm not certified to drive this. Also, it says it belongs to the UEO. I think this is above my pay grade.
Hey, everybody, this kid's the government. There's a narc. There's a narc at the party. This kid is the fucking government.
And so, okay, so at this party, there are people making out. Yes. Good for them. They're the cool kids. There's a lot of people dancing way harder than they should be to the music that's playing.
Yeah, and one of them is very cool. His sign said so.
And then it is just people, like, drinking sugar water and standing around.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's a weird party. It's a really weird party.
But if you think of, like, the guest list, who would be Biff's friends? It's going to be a lot of people who are like, man, I hope there's, like, a cat at the Sanger Institute who wants to hang out in a quiet corner with me.
Yes. God, anytime we go to friends' houses and they're like, oh, you can just ignore the animal, like, they'll bug you, but you don't need to pet them. I was like, I will. Your pet is my baby now. I will pet your pet.
That's my party favor.
I love this thing like it's my child. I'm really here for them, not you.
This is why it's been a while since we visited Clint. He's worried we're going to kidnap Bobby.
Bobby is mine.
Yeah.
I will take Bobby and Frankie. Thank you.
Yes.
When I go see my friend Nora, it's really to see Tangent.
Yes.
Love Tangent. The dog's so sweet.
We know you love a tangent. We listen to Whiskers. Fish have butts. What is this?
They got butts!
So meanwhile, in the other plot, I'm not sure which one is the A plot. I think they get roughly equal time.
There is a old-fashioned-y sub. And I say old-fashioned-y because it's like, not as cool as the Sequest.
Well, what is?
Going to through a dock in an underwater mountain. And we follow it in, and then we are in an evil science lab with a jukebox and a fake shark in a tank.
It's classy, it's very evil, it's very stark and cold, but yes, with a touch of personality, there is like a 50s diner-style jukebox.
All lit up, looks awesome. Yeah. And then we see old dude in karate robes.
This is true!
This is where you want to introduce old dude?
Sure, sure, we will learn. In, like, a whole other act of the episode, eventually we will learn this man is named Abalon, the titular Abalon. And he is played by Charlton Heston.
Yes, he is.
You know, Charlton Heston from The Ten Commandments, from Ben-Hur, from Soylent Green. You know, Charlton fucking Heston is in this show in an evil lab. What if James Bond movies were 40 minutes long and had, like, 2% of the budget?
I think half of the props are from the Sequest lab, actually. The thing with all the, like, colored liquids, that definitely is. That is definitely just Wes Valens.
And so he greets these strapping young lads who are also in, like, full body, four limb leotards.
Except with black modesty shorts.
Yes.
Which you don't see until a later scene, like the next scene they're in, but you're like, oh, it's because your white leotards are fucking see through and I would have seen your dick.
Yes!
You got modesty shorts on, so I don't see every crevice.
I mean, the Ford's Mermaid is coming back naturally. And let me tell you, in every scene, we can see just how cold the water is.
Yes. And she does have a bra underneath. You can see the outline of it, but it's that cold.
But yes, these three Stark dudes with their slick black hair and their all white featureless clothes.
Two dudes. There's only two.
Well, okay. I'm counting Abalon as the third dude.
He does not have, like, I don't know. He's not the same vibe.
True. But it still looks like a Kraftwerk music video is about to break out all the same.
Yeah. And so the young dudes are like, we looked everywhere, father. And we find out that they have been looking for a girl named Mika.
Mika.
Who has run away to the world up there.
One of these brothers is named Kamen, and he is played by Rob Youngblood, who previously starred in a show called Space Precinct.
Mm.
Which is not entirely unlike the BBC's version of Rockne O'Bannon's Alien Nation series.
Oh.
It is a police procedural, and some of the police is aliens.
Mm. Do we ever learn the name of the other one in the show? I don't think we do. I think the only time he refers to one of these two is only calling Kamen's name. Maybe they're both named Kamen.
Ah, Kamen 1 and Kamen 2. Kamen me and Kamen you. So Charlton fucking Heston.
It's like, hey, go back up there and find her. And they're like, okay, father.
The legend of Hollywood. Like, what? Brando and Heston are like the big... that's how big you have to match Charlton Heston is like Brando.
Cary Grant.
Cary Grant too. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
There are very, very few names that have the weight of Charlton Heston here as a guy from a 1967 Star Trek.
Yes. So back at the party.
Yes.
Lucas has finally come up to Juliana because Tall Man is gone.
And we join them in mid-fight.
Yes.
Cutting right to the chase here.
They're having a tiff. She's like, you don't own me, Lucas.
That's like the first line after the ad, right?
Yeah. And he's like, no, I just asked who the goon was with the perfect hair. And she's like, he doesn't have perfect hair. You do. And he's like, no, I don't.
I think the readers of Tiger Beat magazine would disagree, Lucas. You have perfect hair.
So he's like, but you kissed him on the cheek. And she's like, yeah, and I'm going to kiss you. And she kisses him. And she's like, hey, Lucas, that was my older fucking brother. And she's like, my parents wouldn't let me come unless he came with me. Mm-hmm. But here's my question. So I'm like, does that mean your parents found out that when you were at hacker camp, the dude who was supposed to be like your guardian at hacker camp, keeping an eye on all of you, strangled a child? And they were like, oh my God, we're not letting you go anywhere? Is that what happened? Did people find out? Because, like, why? They sent you to... You were living underground at hacker camp for apparently ever.
Months.
And you stayed after he left because you needed to wait for his replacement, apparently. Mm-hmm. So why do your parents not let you go anywhere now? What the fuck? Did they find out you tried to hack the World Bank?
Juliana can go anywhere she wants as long as she has a designated driver. Because this is the weekend, baby. It's time for Juliana to get fucked up.
Is that it? They're
yes,
like...
Yes, yes.
Okay, so they're like, fine, you can be at hacker camp, but you do they make them sign permission slips to leave? Like, they have to get parent permission? Is it like boarding school?
Yes.
Is that what this is? Okay.
She needs a chaperone to leave boarding school.
But then she's like, so Lucas, you don't have to be jealous. And he's like, oh, I wasn't. I was just disappointed. She's like, you won't be. I promise.
Whoa!
Oh, shit!
Damn!
Oh, shit!
You know the best way to calm down a jealous boyfriend is to just make out with him real sensual-like.
Apparently.
I don't know about this, Juliana, but hey, all's well that ends well. Anyhow, beach horses. Horses on the beach.
Okay, so Mika. Mermaid girl, is, first off, stealing clothes off a clothesline to hide her leotard. And now she looks like a fucking sister wife.
She does.
Okay. Because her leotard is a turtleneck that covers all of her limbs. Mm-hmm. So now she's covered in a floor-length floral skirt and a matching sweater. with her turtleneck still on. It's fucking sister wives. And so she's walking down the beach, and then there goes girl with beach horses.
Yes, yes. This woman with a bikini top riding a horse and leading a second riderless horse down the beach.
Which really, I feel like, just solidifies the sister wife thing, because I feel like Mika's like, ah, feminism. I can also ride a horse. In a bikini. I did not think this was a thing I could ever do.
You think Ford is attracted to her because she has a turtleneck, and that's familiar to him.
It's familiar. It feels
it's
good.
It's safe. It feels like home.
It's home. Yeah. Yeah. I fucking hate turtlenecks in this shit. There's so many turtlenecks. I hate all the turtlenecks. So Ford is in a crappy bar.
On the beach. Literally the beach. On the beach.
And this tiki bar has a TV going with, like, sea turtles on it.
Uh-huh.
And
a Jimmy Buffett song's playing, ladies and gentlemen.
And he is just drinking. He's like, hey, give me another. And the guy bartender's like, you want another lime and soda? Wow, must be a really tough week for you.
He's knocking back Sprites at the bar. This is my Ford.
And Ford's like... Yeah, it's been really hard. You don't want to hear about it. Hey, do you have a ballet company in town? And the dude's like, it's a fucking beach town. And Ford's like, yeah, you're right. And y'all, I'll have a beer. Fuck it. Let's have a beer.
A beer. Wow.
In his, remember, sweater and suit jacket and jeans.
As Juliana calls it, breakfast.
So then, sister wife Mika comes in. And Ford sees her sit down and is like, hey, bartender, you know who that is? And he's like, no, I don't know who that is. But he's like, you're a sailor on leave, so, like, maybe go take her to the ballet that we don't have.
That we don't, yeah. Just get out of my bar.
Go have a horizontal ballet.
Sir, that sounds terrible. I hope they didn't twist an ankle. Oh, my goodness. Is everyone okay?
Oh, is this a new type? Is this... What style?
That's, you know, right.
Are they the Russian?
Ford is the kind of guy that calls a bartender sir.
So Ford goes up to her and is not like, oh, hello, you seem familiar to me. He's just immediately like, oh my god, I'm so glad you're real.
I saw you in the ocean. You're real. No one on the Sequest has game. No one has game. They're all so bad at this.
Ortiz does.
Ortiz only seems like he does because he's next to all these people. He's just average.
He will next season.
Well, that's true.
Once he starts wearing tank tops. Like, fuck! So, she's very like, oh no, you don't know me. And then, like, runs out of the bar. And the bartender is like, wow, that's some technique you got there. And Ford goes running after her.
Gives chase in his belted, sweater tucked in jeans down the beach.
And she's running, and she's stripping off her sister wife costume.
This man has never relaxed in his life.
And as she's getting close to the water, the two dudes in their modesty shorts. It's really sister wives. They come out of the water, and they go to grab her, and Ford starts punching them.
He gives one a spin kick. He does a spin kick to the merboy.
But then they start pounding on him, and she runs away, and they drag him into the ocean.
And the camera finds that his emergency beacon button was pressed and was left on the beach.
And then on the Sequest, they're like, oh my god, we got Ford's signal. It's been set off, and they're like, get a launch out there to him now. Oh my god. He's having a mental breakdown about a mermaid.
I mean, it's just a pager button. They don't know what it is. Their first thought has to be, I can't believe it. There's no ballet in this town. You need to get me out of here.
And then we cut back to Mika, who's staring out of the water, crying. So then Bridger, along with Crocker and a new crew member.
New crew member, this, he's not named in this episode, but he will be eventually. This is Chief Shan, and he is played by Dustin Nguyen, best known for his role on 21 Jump Street.
Yes.
So Patrick Hasburg, creator of 21 Jump Street,
yes,
has solo writing credit on two episodes so far.
Yes.
Both of which have brought back a main cast member of 21 Jump Street.
He's like, hey, friends, you want a job? And they're like, yeah, I want a job. And he's like, come have a job.
I mean, this guy is so associated with the franchise, he's in 22 Jump Street.
Yes.
He plays Vietnamese Jesus.
Yes, he does. I love him in this show.
Yeah.
We'll get into it later. But he is introduced in this episode.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so it's him. Again, Crocker, Bridger finds the pager, and then he finds a shoe, and he's like, that's Ford's. And Crocker's like, how do you know? And Bridger's like, who else would put the date when he started to wear them?
Yeah, that's my Ford.
See, I can't fault this because I have an app that tracks my mileage on my running shoes for me.
Sure, sure.
And with the date of when I started wearing them. And I can put other shoes in there.
Mm-hmm.
So when I log a workout, I can select what shoes I wore.
What shoes you're putting your mileage on.
Yes. It's very handy. I don't know why he needs them for going to the ballet. But I can't fault him. Maybe he's really worried about, like, proper spine alignment. So he likes to rotate his shoes so none of them get worn out too fast, and how that like can like mess with your spinal alignment.
Yeah, yeah. It does help with the warranty he's got on his hips. Yeah, yeah.
What if Ford was a ballet dancer? Is that why he's obsessed with the ballet? Because also,
and shoe maintenance, yeah, it
dancers
all lines up.
Need to pay attention to how much time, because your shoes break down. Uh-huh, so he's paying attention. Maybe this is it.
He had a whole Black Swan experience. And that's why he doesn't sleep anymore. It broke his subconscious.
Or maybe it was like a version of Billy Elliot. Well, that's what he wanted to do, but his father never supported his dream.
Right, right. Season two, we'll learn all about
it.
Yeah. That's when we're going to get into the backstories, I'm sure.
They go, like, Crocker and him, they go to, like, look at the beach, try to keep, you know, find clues, and Bridger just kind of looks out at the water and sees a girl, but then she's gone. And he's like, that was weird. Mm-hmm. And then there's a girl again.
Ah! No horses this time. Just a girl.
And she comes out of the water, and he's like, where did you come from? And I'm like, out of the water. and she's like, I live in the sea.
Roy Scheider is a hot guy.
Yes.
Women are just drawn to him.
He's a very attractive old dude.
Yes.
I am not going to lie. Like, that dude got some swagger.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
In all of his films we've seen, he's only hotter.
It is so often that old dudes in show, like, movies and shit that, like, get girls, I'm like, why? Why are people, why? But I'm like, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I get it.
Thinking back to past movie star minutes, I think Jaws is his least sexy performance.
Yes.
Yes.
All That Jazz?
Oh,
oh my gosh. Oh, I mean, I get why he is, like, fucking everyone.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, oh my gosh.
Like, it's plot critical how hot he is.
He's so fucking hot. So fucking hot in that movie.
Fish don't have butts, but Roy Scheider does.
Dang. I love when we agree on this. I feel so close to you.
I love you.
They have a little interaction where he's like, hey, you know, that man you saw at 34,000 feet?
Yeah, yeah.
He's my friend. Can you help us find him? And she's like, yeah, but, like, the dude's gonna try to keep me there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, he'll try to keep me captive. And he's like, no, I know nothing about what I'm agreeing to, but no, he won't.
Well, he's got, like, super torpedoes. Like, he has nukes on his ship. Like, if it comes down to it.
True. So then the sub that we saw earlier going to that mountain lair, we are back to it. And we're now inside it.
Yes.
And we see that it's a really fucking old sub.
It's very Captain Nemo.
Yes.
There's this sense of, like, plush bygone luxury.
There's velvet.
Yeah,
there's cast iron. There's cool port windows. And there's Ford with a gun to his head.
It also reminds me of, like, the villain's private office train car in
yes.
Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yes.
Yes.
Very that. So then we are inside the mountain lair, and Charlton fucking Heston is like, hey, Ford, have you ever seen Metropolis? As it's being projected on a wall.
Because we're building this guy up as classy, as out of time. Real handy that there is a famous public domain film that we can use to communicate that. That's nice. That works out.
And Ford's like, no, I must have missed it. And I'm like, lies! Ford would totally know this movie. Ford is such a fan of TCM.
Someone told him, like, hey, Ford, let's go watch a movie. And he decided, well, first I have to watch every other movie in order so I know what's happening. He hasn't got to Metropolis yet.
He hasn't gotten that far. Charlton Heston is like...
Darling, you forgot his middle name.
Charlton fucking Heston.
Thank you.
Is like, I am just sorry you found us. Mm-hmm, and Ford's like, well, you found me. And he's like, and you found Mika. And then the boys just, like, jump into the water like dolphins and swim away.
Yes, yes.
No words. And Charlton fucking Heston says a lot of shit. Some stuff about how, like, these are a new breed of men.
Every time they say Mika, I just think of that singer who was, like, popular and looked like my college roommate. You remember this guy?
No. Does he have a song I should know?
He had a big song when that guy was my college roommate.
I do not know that. I just feel like Mika is the name of a dolphin, though.
It would be the name of a dolphin. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
If you told me, like, Darwin's mom's name is Mika, I'd be like, yep. Absolutely. If Shed was like, hey, this is our new beluga, I'd be like,
Yeah, I told Mika what Darwin was saying about condom use, and she's like, yeah, that's fine. We're Catholic, actually.
So, Charlton fucking Heston.
Yes.
Again, says a lot of shit.
He says some wild shit, like...
Like, he says Commander Ford's name, and even though he's, like, spewing all this, like, random-ass shit about, like, the future and, like, a new breed of man and shit, Ford is just stuck on, how do you know my name?
Water is so much more than you people think it is, Jonathan. What does that mean? What do you mean?
It's the lifeblood of the planet. It knows everything.
What do you mean it know? What does it know? How does it know?
And then he... Okay, and so then he's like, my children call me Abalon. When I lived above, I was Franklin Wise.
And this is a name that Ford knows, not Fritz Lang. He doesn't know that name.
No.
But he recognizes this as a guy who was doing experiments decades ago.
Who was said to have died in 1953.
Yes, yes.
It is like 2018, 2019 in this timeline, let's remember. And so his experiments were like trying to make a way for people to breathe underwater. And he used, like, rats, but then, like, he's like, I think I heard that you used people, and they died.
And his retort is, how many dead astronauts circle the globe? And the answer to that, in reality at least, is none. That's none.
None. So we are in our second story here about people trying to breathe underwater.
Our second story about someone who faked their own death to try to plant gills into people.
Yes. It's almost like...
Both from the same director, even.
Charlton fucking Heston is like, hey, Ford, you know, here's the deal. You can leave if you want. And he's like, great, how? Well, we could turn you into a fish. Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun.
At least this one is not a close personal friend of Nathan Bridger.
He is not. Because he was dead before he could become one. You better believe if he didn't fake his death in 1953, he would have been a friend of Bridger's.
It's like 65 years ago this guy died. So we go to commercial on that shocking cliffhanger and come back to our other plot in a hospital room.
So apparently the Sanger Institute has its own medical wing.
Uh-huh.
And Lucas and Juliana are sitting on one of the medical beds with a walker right behind them.
Yes!
And there's
like a privacy screen for getting into your robe, your hospital gown.
It is so fucking awkward. And she's like, so, Lucas, do you like it here? And he's like, well, I feel like I'm getting a tooth pulled. And she's like, is this your first time? And he's like, oh no, I had a bicuspid out to get my braces. It's fine. She's like, no. Is this like your first time?
With this, the word is this. We can't say it. We still can't say anything about sex. But this is the scene where I like it. Because like, the whole thing is around this verge of innocence. Of course they can't say it.
They're two teens who are too scared to say the words, even though they're going to like maybe do it.
Too big. I scared. Emotionally, it's too big.
Yeah. Not you, Lucas. Sorry.
My brother, though, that dude's fee-fi-fo-fummin' over here.
You shouldn't know that. It's your brother.
I mean, he's 8'12". For one thing, that's not what I meant. But the other, like, just proportionally, one has to assume.
You have to assume.
You have to.
So, but yeah, there is this sense of innocence. And there is, like, in this scene, a really great... They're both just as terrified.
Yes.
And they're both, like... They don't want to be either of them the ones to, like, say anything or lead, like, when she asks him, like, hey, is it your first time? Like, he doesn't want to say yes. Mm-hmm. So he's like, well, is it yours? And when she's like, yeah, he's like, yeah, mine too. Like, okay.
They both want to. There's clearly parts of them that want to.
Yes.
But as, like, the fact that they can't say the fucking word is a pretty big hint that it's just not going to happen. But it takes a long time to reach that.
And we have to get through, like...
I think we just need to relax.
Yes. I think we just need to relax. And, like, my friend said that, like, you're supposed to be scared and nervous. That's what makes it so beautiful. And like, let me just lay down on this hospital bed and you lay down next to me. And this isn't weird at all.
It looks like they're about to take sleeping together very literally.
Like, let's take drugs and die.
Maybe we should have talked to Darwin. He'd know what to do from here.
But outside
in the party, yes.
The cops come.
The state police have shut down this party. Not worried about the tax evasion, though. They don't know about that
part. They don't know about that. They're just like, hey, who's in charge here? And Biff tries to go up to like, hello, Dr. Biff Pickering. How can I help you? We're having a conference here. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you got a dad? He's like, yeah, let's go call him. So back in the hospital room, finally, one of them has the guts to say, and it's Lucas... Like, let's not do this. We're not ready.
It's my responsible boy. Aw, there he is. Who's my responsible boy?
And they share a nice kiss.
And she thanks him. She's
And they're having a nice little moment of like, you're right. Like, let's not. But like, let's smooch. Because this is at least nice. And then her brother walks in.
Anyway,
and
Lucas, both... you free in 2 weeks.
And they both shoot up. And he's like, what the hell's going on? Like, nothing.
I smell the blood of an Englishman. What's going on in here?
And Lucas's life is threatened. And he's like, I will leave. I will get out of here. But before I go, let me, like, say goodbye. And he's like, no, go. You're not saying goodbye to her.
This man looks like an alien. His face is so angular.
It is.
His eyes are so big.
I mean, all of him is so big. He's just such a gigantic man.
He's terrifying and frightful to behold. He's a muscle elf, this man.
So it makes sense that Lucas runs away really fast. back on the Sequest, Wes...
When Juliana was planning to go all the way, to use the popular parlance...
Yes.
What was she planning to do with her brother?
Well, if the party wouldn't have gotten broken up, he'd still be out there.
Because there's like a Mario Kart tournament and he signed up for it. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right.
He's out there.
It's the cop's fault.
It's the cop's fault. If the cops didn't show up, he wouldn't have gone looking for her and they could have.
He'd be double fisting the sugar drinks.
Yes. And it would have all been fine. Or he would have walked in on them. It may be something a little more scarring.
I'm glad someone got to enjoy the fisting. Gosh.
I love you.
Love you.
So back on the Sequest, it is Wes Phelan's job this week to give us a presentation.
Yep.
So she's talking about gills and mouse backs. And
We have like...
slideshow?
Archival footage of mice swimming around in hyperoxygenated water.
And she explains how this research was done in the 40s, and apparently, you know, Charlton fucking Heston tried it on humans, and then he committed suicide in 1953.
No one involved with cutting-edge ocean research actually kills themselves. That's just what they want you to think.
Yeah, don't believe it. They should be like, this sounds oddly familiar. I bet he's alive. So now the Sequest is going through an underwater mountain tunnel.
Because there was an extended version of the sequence that got cut.
Yes.
In the extended version, there is a brief interruption from Darwin squeaking, just for some comic relief, I guess. But then, after Wes Phelan's presentation is over, Mika swims up out of the moon pool and has a conversation with Bridger, and she points up at the screen with this, like, archival picture of Charlton Heston.
It's Charlton Heston's, like, fucking headshot from, like, back in the day.
But again, real handy to have that when you cast someone like this. You can just find that in a book anywhere in Los Angeles. And she's like, oh yeah, that's my dad.
And Bridger's like, cool, can you take us there? And she's like, okay. And so now we're going through a bit, like, a mountain tunnel. And I'm just kind of like, why are you taking the entire Sequest through this very tight-fitting tunnel?
It's a real tight fit!
You could send a launch.
You know Abalon's looking at the monitor, the vid screen, while this is happening, just thinking like, man, I should not have widened the tunnel. We did not... my boys just swim. It doesn't need to be this wide.
And so, in the evil lair, Abalon is doing some medical shit to an unconscious Ford and is telling the boys to prepare the water as they see, like, the Sequest coming through these tunnels, because, of course, they have surveillance equipment. Mm-hmm. And then Abalon radios to them and is like, welcome to Abalon! So not only is Abalon his name, the place is called Abalon.
Yes.
This dude is so fucking full of himself. I'm pretty sure the other boy's name is Abalon.
My children call me Abalon because they're very stupid. They think I share a name with our place. Can you believe that? Oh, they're dumb boys.
This is Abalon. I'm Abalon. That's Abalon. Everything's Abalon.
You think the jukebox is supposed to be a hint he's from the 50s?
Yes. He really likes those old-timey things.
What, like Roy Orbison? What?
It goes with the sister wife thing. They can only listen to the old music. The other stuff is too worldly.
You even put on Buddy Holly, and these, like, ocean boys just start putting their hands over their ears and screaming. That's too much. That's too much for them.
It's too much. But yeah, so he's like, welcome to Abalon. And Bridger's like, I'm captain of the Sequest. And he's like, I know who you are, Captain Nathan Hale, Bridger.
Oh, you're in trouble.
What is with this dude and saying their names like this? It's so weird. Here's the thing. It's 2018. Yeah, you Googled it. I got it. Like, it's not impressive.
Well, it's really hard to get a computer down there. They wind up so wet. They get so wet.
I mean, I give him credit for being so fucking old and learning new technology.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, 165 years old.
Still learning how to Google. He just thinks he's the only one that does it.
Apparently, ocean living gives you eternal life. Something about the ions down here.
Yeah, he talks about the ions and the temperature reduces decaying.
This must be a great comfort to everyone living in these dome settlements. They're going to live forever.
He, like, shuts off the link.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he's blocked them, just mm-hmm. assuming, like, yes, you'll come to me. I don't need to speak to you anymore, peasants. And here's the thing that really gets me with the fact, like, why couldn't you just send a fucking launch? Because they get in a sea crab to go over.
They use the sea crab's legs to, like, pry open the gap and force their way in.
And so we got Bridger, we got Miko, we got Crocker, we got and Shan. And so
Shan the man.
They come out and Shan and Crocker immediately pull their guns and Bridger's like, no, don't do that.
And again, like, everything with Abalon is very Star Trek the original series, yes. Right? This is a guy who has made an incredible recovery, but he must keep it close because this is all about protecting his secrets and not letting them get out. And he's built this whole world to his own whims, and everyone wears very stark jumpsuits, and you can see a lady's nipples all the time. It's very Star Trek.
Yes, it is. And so he talks about how, you know, he created his own children and made them pure
mm-hmm.
and shit. And then Bridger's like, where's Ford? And he hits, and before he answers the question, he's like, Mika, are you going to stay with us? And she's like, no. And so he's like, fine, and hits a button, and a curtain drops, and we see Ford suspended like a starfish in a tank of water yes. in just a Speedo.
Looking real hunky.
And Bridger...
It's not a Speedo. It's shorts that have bunched badly.
This is true. And so Bridger grabs a chair or something and smashes the glass to get him out of there as Shan and Crocker do fucking kung fu.
Well, Shan does kung fu. Shan is doing spin kick after spin kick with some high yes. kicks in between.
And Crocker just starts punching dudes.
Crocker's just doing these lumbering punches and, like, going from one to the other, you can tell which one of them is an actual martial artist.
Yes.
And which is a guy who had a nightclub act.
I love the fact that this new security guy shows up to, spoilers, do a lot of action in the next few episodes.
Yeah, he's just whipping ass whenever we see him.
And Crocker, who, like, has not done anything but held a gun at someone.
He's done occasional gunplay.
He's suddenly brawling. It's like, I'm not gonna be done up by this dude. Let me go punch some dudes.
It's like watching a Rock'em Sock'em robot next to an actual boxer. You know?
I love it. I love it so much. Though, I am like over here like, I mean, you had that one really buff dude. Why didn't we use him to punch people if we wanted someone to punch people?
Yeah.
You had casts that looked like they could actually, like, beat people up.
Well, they used up their giant man quota on this episode. The slot was filled.
So then, Kamen grabs a futuristic looking... Well, I say futuristic, but it looks like a gun from movies from, like, alien movies from, like, the 1940s. And points it at them.
It was the style at the time, Captain Nathan Hale Bridger.
And Abalon's like, no, let them go. Mika made her choice.
Yeah. So it is his personal fatherly tragedy. It is the end of The Little Mermaid celebrating its 5th anniversary at the time of release. He has to let his beloved daughter be where the people are.
She looks strangely like what Ursula turns into. Her disguise.
Right.
If you were casting a live action at the time, you would have cast her to play what Ursula transforms into.
Sure.
Yeah.
There are also elements of Splash in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Which was 10 years old at the time of release. So we're hitting a lot of anniversaries here.
And as they're, like, at the door, Bridger's like, it doesn't have to be this way. And Charlton fucking Heston's like, yes, it does.
Yes, it does.
And they leave. Oh, and then he's like, I know you'll come back, Nathan Hale Bridger.
Fuck. Spoilers, he's fucking wrong.
Or others will.
You know what? That might be true. That might be foreshadowing. I don't know. But it's time for the third deleted scene, where they are in their escape, the ground starts shaking, the place seems to be unstable as they're getting away, and Katie Hitchcock gets them out just in time. That's another thing that would have benefited the episode to have.
Oh, the tension of it?
Yeah. And also the implication that maybe he got sealed in by a cave-in and they're lost to the world again the way they like it. Maybe. I don't know.
Though I would have liked a reason why, other than just
a reason would be good.
Sequest maybe, like, you know, shouldn't have tried to wedge in there.
Oh, yeah.
I don't feel like there was a reason for there suddenly to be an earthquake.
The helmsman rotation, the rookie was on.
Yeah. It was training day.
It was Crash Krieg is what it was.
So Lucas is flying through the water in the Stinger, and suddenly there are sea cops behind him in a little personal sub that is exactly the design of the other dude, but it now has lights around it.
So you remember how these personal submersibles were cutting edge, the wave of the future?
It's for cops.
Now they're so widespread, there are beat cops patrolling the seas for other single occupancy subs that are driving erratically or irresponsibly.
Yes.
This is another thing where it's your stock teen party plot with no thought at all at how it fits in Sequest.
So Bridger is in his bed, sleeping, and gets woken up by a call on the vidlink, and it is an officer on the beach that's like, hey, do you know Lucas Walencheck? And he's like, the only one I know is supposed to be at a conference. And the camera pans over, and Lucas is like, yeah, it's me. I'm here. I'm here. Oh. And he's just like, oh. So we go to the moon pool, mm-hmm. where we see Mika very naked.
But the good thing is she brought her own jumpsuit, unlike all the other visitors. So she's very thoughtful, actually.
She's actually naked in this one. She does not have the jumpsuit on for this scene.
But she did bring it all the same.
She brought it.
Yeah.
But she, like, jumps in the moon pool naked, does a little swim, and then we go to a sleeping Ford, who she is, well, in a robe, does the weirdest fucking stroke of his forehead. And it makes sense in a minute why, but, like, her entire hand is, like, pushed together, making a little cuppy thing, and she just, like...
She's giving him the little cuppy touch. You know, everyone loves a cuppy touch once in a while.
It's like her hand is paralyzed, and she's moving her entire arm to stroke his head. It's so awkward. It's so weird.
There's a little bit of the marionette about her movement. Yes.
So then when he wakes up, they have a little conversation. He's like, what are you gonna do next? And she's like, I'm not sure. And he's like, hey, could we go out?
And Ford has no game because she's immediately like, no, absolutely not.
But then she turns around and drops her robe, which maybe has him a little like, but it's to show him her back gills.
So what? That ain't stopping me. You got a front, lady, don't you? Come on.
And then she's like, look at my webbed fingers. That's why I was stroking your head weird. And he's like, you want to go to the ballet?
Hell yeah, my man. Yeah.
So then Lucas is back on the Sequest, and he is in Captain Bridger's cabin apologizing.
He's waiting for a lecture, and the captain tells him that this one's too stupid to deserve the lectures. Just shut up.
He's like, don't do it again. Give me the keys. And Lucas goes to take the keys out of his pocket, and they fall along with the condom.
And this is the first time you clearly see the condom. There isn't even like...
It's a close-up.
There isn't even a clear shot of it when he gets it from Krieg. No. We're waiting until the last minute of the episode.
And Bridger's like, hey, is this yours? And he's like, well, not exactly.
I don't think Krieg was expecting it back, big fella.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, you want to borrow something else is what Krieg says. He's like, it's not a borrow, it's a keep.
It's definitely, this is not, we make them disposable now, kid.
And he's like, oh, you can keep it if you want. Like, it's fine, Captain.
I've been watching you in Westphal, and, you know, there's some glances. There's, like, a vibe around C-Deck that people are picking up on.
And Bridger's like, you know, I had one of these in my wallet when I was 16.
Through 27.
He does say I carried it for a really long time after that. And I'm like, man, I bet it was expired. And he's like, maybe you should carry it in your wallet, too. And Lucas looks like he wants to die. But takes it and leaves.
And the good thing is, in the utopian-ish future of Sequest 2018, 2019, mm-hmm. they make condoms out of wallet-resistant material. Yeah, it's not...
that is... I was just like, Krieg, Bridger, both of you need to tell him to not keep it in his fucking wallet. That's not safe. It's gonna get fucking worn down. It's gonna, like, mess with the packaging, and then it's not gonna be any helpful. Come on, boys.
Well, Darwin told him it was fine. The problem is, Darwin doesn't have pockets. He's not really clear what they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No suit, skin.
No pants, no pockets. So that is the end of the episode, except for, of course... Bob. The Bob fact.
And Bob does not give us facts about teens fucking. No, no, no.
But he gives us some stories. No, that's not true.
He decides to tell us about a trench.
He decides to tell us about Challenger Deep in the Marianas Trench, 35,800 feet down off the coast of Guam, where the pressure gets up to 8 tons per square inch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's it. That's a Bob fact.
That's Bob fact.
So, darling, do you have a Bob fact?
Yes, yes, I do. So, my Bob fact is that the first latex condom was made in the 1920s.
Uh-huh. Oh, so Abalone would be familiar with these.
Yes, I mean, and like versions of, you know, condoms have existed for hundreds of years before then, mm-hmm. but like the latex condom.
Right.
Now, it got me wondering, because this is like the future, right?
Yes.
So, like...
They're made of Teflon now.
Is there stuff out there that's about, like, the future of the condom?
I mean, generally, textures seem to be where the innovation lies in our lifetime.
Well, I found out that in 2015, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation apparently had...
And you know they're freaks over there.
Had a contest to build a better condom. They received 812 entries.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently 11 of them were given $100,000 each to continue, like, the development of their better condoms.
Mm. This one is, it also works as a mousetrap. You have to be very careful, please. Yeah.
I don't know what ended up happening with this. I just found the article from 2015 talking about the 11. And my favorite thing about that article was, like, they would give the official name of whatever the design was, but the article named it a fun name instead.
A fun name?
Yes. So everything had a fun name.
The Twizzler.
And then was, like, the boring name that is actually the name of the design.
Did any of them jump out at you? I hope not literally. Maybe it was an animated sort of slideshow.
Hold on. I'm going to get so many, like, my algorithm's just going to be shoving condoms in my face at this point.
Well, somebody's got to.
Right? Meet the 11 condoms of the future selected by Bill Gates.
I hope not by hand.
The Tenderloin. And then it's boring, actual name. Ultra-sensitive, reconstituted Calligan condom.
Collagen, huh?
Collagen, yes. Mm. So then we got the shrinking sheath.
Mm.
The handlebar, aka the Big Easy.
Why do they have these names? What is futuristic about them?
These are the names that I think the article's giving them.
Yes, yes, but I'm very
then
curious.
Then we have the Saran Wrap.
I don't like the sound of that.
At boring actual name is the Ultra Sheer Wrapping Condom with Superior Strength. The Model T.
Like Kylo Ren's lightsaber? Like, what are we talking about here?
Boring actual name. Engineering a biologically inspired condom. This one was designed at Northwestern.
Oh.
The Warm Embrace.
Mm.
Daddy's Little Helper.
Whoa. Whoa.
The boring actual name. Super hydrophilic nanoparticle condom coating.
Nanoparticles?
Yeah.
Whoa! Sounds itchy.
Apparently, it will add a thin layer of lubrication, helping protect the condom from breakage.
Oh, okay.
The memory stick.
That is one of my favorite Lady Gaga songs, for sure. For,
the cheating heart. The invincible Trojan.
Okay, that sounds good.
The invisible glove. Those were all the names. But yeah, so those are my Bob facts, and also don't put it in your wallet. Don't do that. That's stupid. Also, don't leave it in your car or any place with extreme temperatures.
More of a Bridger fact, I guess. Yeah.
Or really, it's not just a wallet. It's any place where there's lots of friction.
Yeah, constricting and rubbing.
Yeah, don't do that.
You want to save all the rubbing for the end. You want to save the
rubbing and the constriction for the moment.
Yeah. You don't want to go off prematurely. Maybe some of those condoms of the future can help with that.
Mm-hmm.
I got a Bob fact.
Yeah, what's your Bob fact?
Mermaids are not real. That is my Bob fact. However, I shall continue.
Okay.
In the year 1712, Samuel Fellures of the Dutch East India Company found himself a mermaid.
Mermaid!
Approximately 5 feet long. He kept it alive in a tank for 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
It was painted in a manuscript of creatures. Here is that painting.
Yes.
That's a mermaid.
Yeah.
In his diary, he noted down the results of his inspection of the creature and found it, quote, shaped like a woman.
Yeah.
Even at the time, in 1712, many people believed it was simply a dugong, misidentified as a half-woman fish.
Mm.
However, more recent scholarship of this claim has proposed that it may be an oar fish or something like it.
Mm-hmm.
Bonus mermaid-based Bob fact, the costumes of Avalon's children may have been inspired by the thin, all-white diving clothes of the Japanese Ama, the pearl-diving women, who have become a tourist attraction promoted as real-life mermaids for their deep-sea unassisted diving of great lengths to get them pearls.
I'll just say I think Bob is a coward. There's so many things he could have talked about that were better Bob facts that were much more connected to this episode than a trench. You can talk about a trench any fucking time, episode. Bob.
You could have talked about, I don't know, personal diving suits if you wanted to take the inciting incident as the only thing you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Bob Ballard of the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute. The median age for first sexual intercourse in the United States is just shy of 17 years old, around 16 and 10 months. Next time on Sequest.
Yes. Or at least, I don't know, give me a mating ritual about dolphins, Bob.
We heard enough about that today. I don't know if I could take it. I don't know if my poor heart could handle that. I love this episode. Because of the parallel with Charlton fucking Heston, but I love this episode for three big reasons. The first of which is that it does remind me of the goofy fun of mid-tier original Star Trek.
Yeah.
It's not as wild as Spock's brain for sure, but it fits in the hey man, we got to do something this week. Let's go.
Yeah.
The second is, I love all the four jokes.
Yeah.
Patrick's got my back.
Yeah.
And the third is, I really think it's a very sweet depiction of Lucas as a character, and Juliana coming back is great. Mm-hmm. And I love that story. I wish it were more suited to the situation of the show, and they weren't he gets pulled over by a submarine cop. I don't know. That stuff is dumb, but the heart of it, the core of it, the scene with the two of them in the hospital bed is incredible stuff. I love it.
We forgot to talk about a deleted scene. We forgot to talk about, there's one, which it's a little hard to know exactly where it happens in the episode, but it's where Krieg goes to the cafeteria.
Yes!
And he's with Ortiz. O'Neill and Shan.
Shan gets lines.
And Krieg's like, oh, like, there's, you know, news kind of thing. Like, let's talk about the gossip. Mm-hmm. And Shane's like, yeah, we know Lucas's conference is actually a party. Like,
and O'Neill has been spying on it. Yeah. You freak. You creep.
He was spying on the communication, so they all know. But I also kind of love that they're all like, yeah, we're not going to bust his ass. He can go to a party. He's 16.
Because they're all the cool guys. But yeah.
Krieg's like, oh, actually not that. Like, Ford's going fucking nuts. He thinks he saw a mermaid.
Like, that's the tag on the end is like this tight close-up. He says, boys, he's seeing mermaids.
But, you think you're in a ghost story?
But you know how he said Krieg should have like 8 different euphemisms for sex?
Yeah.
He does for losing your marbles, and he doesn't even use that one.
Yeah.
My favorite is, quote, he took the big walk down La La Boulevard.
Uh-huh.
That's, what a thing to say.
And Krieg would have said 20 different ways. Of like, Lucas.
Benjamin Krieg, I think, was a college boy or a high school fella.
Yeah.
When the Bloodhound Gang released The Bad Touch, parentheses, Discovery Channel.
Yeah.
He knows a lot of euphemisms.
Yeah.
You could just go down the lyric sheet.
A funny thing that I think could have happened, like, if they, or if, like, the episode didn't just end there at the end where it did, or if it was a show that carried stuff more into, like, the next episode.
Right.
Would be Lucas getting a sex talk by, like, every crew member.
Yes!
Right? Okay?
Yes.
Krieg being like, boy, I told you. Wes Phelan, who's just, like,
it's strictly medical. And there are slides.
And he is so, like, embarrassed because this is basically his mom.
Oh, does she have the, like, scare tactic, just really nasty boils STD slides?
No, I think she's gonna have all the slides and the factual stuff, but then she's gonna be like, Lucas, you need to make sure she feels good. It's not just about your pleasure. It's about hers.
She's given like the joy of sex presentation. Yes. It's a beautiful, natural thing.
Yes.
And now
this is an ovary.
The clitoris is not entirely external. You will see.
And you should also note, Tate, if you go a couple inches in, like, okay, and then
I'm
like,
marking this one explicit.
Then, like, I'm just imagining him going to, like, O'Neill, who's like, I can't give you any advice at all. Ortiz, who's like, okay, Lucas, here's what you're gonna do.
I would love the scene.
Crocker, who's just talking in, like, sea shanties. Everything's a fish euphemism. Like a fish.
He only speaks in euphemisms that are just impenetrable. Lucas leaves so confused.
Yes. And then you got Hitchcock, who's like the most terrifying for Lucas to have to go sit down with.
Hitchcock has the scare slides.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Like, it would have been amazing. Just Lucas, this is your punishment, is you go get a sex talk from everyone.
I really want this scene where, like, Lucas finds himself alone with O'Neill, and he rolls his eyes, and he's like, okay, fine, what do you have to say? And O'Neill's like, oh, I just happen to be tell me what it's like when you come back. I'm really curious. That's the scene I want.
Yeah. And then there's Ford, who actually gives him a legit, actual good sex talk and covers all the bases in, like, the way that it should. Mm-hmm. Very matter of fact and, like, to the point.
Whereas Krieg's,
like,
is just telling him what all the bases mean.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, because it's all baseball metaphors. But Ford's just like, oh my god, everyone, leave him alone. Lucas, come on. We're going to go have a nice club soda. He's sit you down.
He's got a manual. It's the guide to getting it
on.
Yes, it is. 14th edition, because we're in 2018.
Yes. Oh my god, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now there's a Bob fact for you, let me tell you.
Mm-hmm. Bridger would have called up Malcolm the Dolphin Man.
I do not want to hear from Malcolm the Dolphin Weirdo.
It's like, you're raising your own child now. Let's give mine a talk as well. Get it both out of the way.
God, I have to keep in mind that at any moment, They could just drop Malcolm the Dolphin Weirdo back in and, like, let's just have a checkup with Caesar Tesla. There's no, like, it's a possibility on the table. You could get jump scared by Caesar Tesla.
Yeah. That's a good episode. I like this episode.
Yeah.
This episode's good. I enjoy it. It's fun. It's goofy.
Mm-hmm.
It's got, I don't know, it's just got a little bit of everything.
That it does. It does have a little bit of everything. A little bit of
everything.
But I guess we're done talking about it.
I guess we're done talking about it. So, you know what y'all should do? You should leave us a rating and review.
You should. You should. I love it. I eat them all up, yum, yum, yummy, in my tummy. While you're out there, you should also tell somebody about the show.
Tell your friends.
We are growing steadily, and while those algorithmic boosts help on their own, and mostly I just really love seeing new reviews, where the growth is coming from is people talking about the show.
Yes, exactly. So you should tell your friend. You should also follow us on Blue Sky and talk about us there. Share with your friends. Engage with us.
Let me just open it up right now and, oh, it does the 30 plus thing on our notifications.
Oh my god. Oh, someone just found us.
Someone just liked
everything. Hello, new listener.
Hello.
I'm going with.
So that's fun.
Yeah.
But. I can't be selfish.
No.
Our calls to action can't be entirely whisker-based when this is coming out on day and date of the final episode of the first season of Throwback Bound.
Yes, my other podcast.
This very day, you can hear not only episodes on the entire run of the first season of Spellbinder, but both novelizations.
Yes, it is time to talk about the final novelization.
With special guest reporter Emma.
Yes, and it is a good one, because let me tell you, you're going to hear all about Cannibal Tom. It's very important.
I'm so curious about Cannibal Tom.
I love Cannibal Tom. It went so many places I didn't know it was going to go.
Generally, it's like roasted on a spit or put in a boiling pot. Those are the two big ones, but...
So check that out, Throwback Bound. You can find it wherever you listen to this podcast, too. And season one's done, so like if you're one of those people who don't like to listen as it comes out, there's a whole backlog
for you.
There's like 27 episodes for you.
28? Because it's like... It's a 26-episode show plus two
There's
with Emma.
There's 28 episodes for you to listen to. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyhow, that is enough of that. We will come at you next time with something entirely different.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. The home stretch of SeaQuest Season 1.
We're almost there. It's only a couple more left. It's the final disc.
It's the final countdown, and won't you count with us?
One, two,
and three. With that,
I'm Elena.
I'm Grant, and in the words of Captain Nathan Hale Bridger,
for beneath the surface lies the fucking future.